Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, August 17th, 2002, and this session at Holden is called Deep Wilderness Today, the Well-Being or Wilderness in Your Cup of Coffee. It is presented by Jonathan Ferrix, and it is tape number FRJ 2002-05. Let's listen in.
Time to start. Welcome. This is the last of five workshops and discussions about what I call deep wilderness today. My name is Jonathan Ferrix, and I work for Lutheran World Relief in the field of communication. And what I tried to do in the five, and this one is a little different than the others, was take you to places where we didn't just have a wilderness like we have in the Bible, a dry, inhospitable place where people go for inspiration, clarity, maybe some suffering before they come out and come strong, but they also meet God there. Today's wilderness is the wilderness of the global economy. So it isn't a place. We've talked about Afghanistan, we've talked about Palestine, we've talked about AIDS in Africa. But this is the wilderness of a global economy. And I think it's increasingly important because the economy is becoming ever more global. Our power in the world is defined nowhere better than by our power as our purchasing power and the terms that we deal with other people in trade. And to bring it into some kind of focus for us, we're lucky because we have a tremendous connection to it through the second most heavily traded commodity in the world. And that's coffee. What's first most heavily traded commodity in the world?
Oil.
Coffee is second to oil. Occasionally, in some years, steel will beat coffee. But coffee as the second most heavily traded, but usually it's coffee. And I think the proposition we have is what you have in that cup right there, let's all turn and look at.
This is tea.
Troublemakers show up in every class.
Coffee was all gone.
What you have in your cup of coffee, we could probably think of as the thing that links you most directly in your day to some of the smallest players in the world economy. And unfortunately, most of them are small players, as in hired hands, landless people who get very little of the return on their labor from the product that we are willing to pay. And here we are in the Northwest. It's a great place to talk about this. How much? $3 a cup? $3.50? So I'd like to do some economics with you around coffee and then have you meet a couple people through a video that we did at Lutheran World Relief as part of the LWR Coffee Project. And right now there's about 2,500 parishes who are using fairly traded coffee in the ELCA and the LCMS. Yeah, if you can pull that off in a second, that'd be great. So what I usually do is I usually have a clear glass cup of coffee at this point, and I take 10 sips out of it and drink it all gone in 10 sips. And I tell you where each sip goes, but I couldn't find a clear glass. And now you said the coffee was gone, but if that coffee cup was full, here's the coffee. The first sip is really three sips. One, two, three, brings it down to there, and let's say it's 25% to 30%, and the retailer gets that. So whoever it is who's actually served you the coffee or sold it to you is taking the first two to three sips. The second seven sips go to, it's somewhere between two and three, so we get into some unround numbers here. But the second sips go to people like this. The shipper and the roaster, 50% of the price of the cup of coffee is going to the shipper and the roaster. Then we have the exporter. This is actually, you could say five or six. The exporter gets a sip. And you're left with three, or two and seven. You've taken nine sips. There's one left at the bottom, and that's for the grower. So a tenth, in the best of cases, of what the grower what the grower gets out of the price of that cup of coffee. And when you look at what it takes to grow coffee, anybody who's seen coffee growing and seen people grow it? Yeah. Do you know what's involved to be a coffee farmer? Here's a string of verbs. Clears the land, plants the trees, waits 3 to 5 years for the trees to bear, cultivates the land, picks the cherries with the red pulp around the actual bean that we eat or drink, soaks them, depulps them, 5 or 6 washings and scrubbings after you've depulped them to get the beans clean, dries that out, bags them, and then usually carries them down the mountain and gets them to the first buyer. And there's this chain then of middlemen that are reflected in the wholesaler, the shipper, the roaster, the transportation, the exporter, the original buyer. There's more steps to it than I've shown you. But to say that the original grower gets 10% is being pretty optimistic about what happens. But just remember this sort of summary, the person that does 90% of the work gets 10% or less of the benefit. And the person that takes most of the risk for disease, for frost, for world prices, is the person who gets the least out of it. And you get a gradation here of, because coffee is mostly drunk. The good kinds of coffee are mostly drunk in rich countries. Rich, colder countries, and it's grown in hot, poorer countries. And so this guy is getting his money at third world rates. And these people are taking their money at first world rates because that's where they live and that's what they need to live. And the chain is long. Well, what I'd like to propose that we do is look at this phenomenon a little bit more closely and then look at a couple people involved. A man selling coffee through the fair trade, through the free trade, the conventional market, and a woman doing the same thing through the fair trade market. And just before you do that, Hank, let me tell you a little story. I was in Nicaragua where this video was made, and we were talking about price of things, relative price of things, where they are, and where they're sold and who buys them. And a bunch of bananas showed up at this farm where we were talking. And the bananas, a whole bunch, you know, something this big that weighs about 20 pounds, showed up. And to buy it right there would cost you 4 cordobas in this mountain farm in Nicaragua. 4 cordobas is 30 cents to buy the whole bunch, because it literally could come off the tree 50 yards away. And then we said, what would you have to pay for it if you bought it down here in San Juan del Rio Coco, the little town I'm going to show you in the video in a minute, San Juan del Rio Coco in northern Nicaragua. What would it cost down there? And they said, well, 6 cordobas. So it costs 50 cents several miles away in the little provincial town of San Juan, the same bunch of bananas. And then we said, what about in the provincial capital of Esteli, which is probably 3 hours drive? In Esteli, that same bunch of bananas would cost $1. And then we said, what about Managua, the capital city of Nicaragua, about 8 hours drive away? And they said, oh, $1.65, converting the cordobas into dollars. And then they said to us, what would it cost in America? Well, we don't buy bananas by the bunch. We buy them by the hand, or even by the two or three at a time. And we calculated that you'd be doing really well if you were able to get the bunch for $20. But comparing it to which one of these things? But the price we're willing to pay for the exact same bananas is, we figured, at the very most generous, it's 10 times as much. But it's not hard to see it being 20 times as much as whichever price you pick as the point of reference. And it was an interesting discussion because we were amazed at how cheap the bananas were. And they were amazed at how expensive, but they were amused actually at what we were willing to pay for bananas. amused, I think it was the word that looked on their faces. And together we could put a picture together about the economics of distance and of relative value of somebody's labor who is lowly paid and somebody's labor who has a lot of money to spend on things. And so you have this picture that we can put together, but we can't do much about it. What we're talking about in Nicaragua is a fruit that grows next door. What we're talking about in America is a multinational industry that is actually vertically integrated. That means the people who grow the bananas, Dole or Chiquita, are also the people that sell them. If not to you, they sell them to the supermarket that you buy them from. So it's integrated all the way up the line from the actual plantation, the shipping, to the distribution and the wholesaling, and maybe not retailing, but almost one step short of you in this country. So it's vertically integrated. To them, our price for bananas might as well have been on the moon, because they could do that little about it. They could benefit that little from it because of the structure of integrated multinational activity. They are in the wilderness of the global economy when it comes to bananas. Big plantations that are hooked up to big companies that we know are the ones generating the bananas. As we did this, we were drinking freshly brewed, locally grown coffee because it's a coffee growing area. And thankfully, coffee is a product you can do something about. Pretty hard to break up the banana cartels. Maybe it'll happen someday. But coffee is not vertically integrated. Each step along the line between these different people that are involved tends to be a different business, a different small businessman or bigger businessman. Maxwell House, of course, has a big piece of some major high economic low overhead production in it. But coffee is not vertically integrated, it's horizontally divided. So you can say, could we do something different with that chain that links us to the smallest players in the world market, the coffee farmers? The coffee is generally grown by small farmers in poor countries. About 20 million people depend directly on the livelihood of growing coffee. And the number of actual farmers growing it is about 3 million, I think. Some of it is plantation, especially in Brazil, and increasingly, very sad for the price of coffee, if you're a farmer, in Vietnam. Through the World Bank, Vietnam has leapfrogged into second place as world producer of the kind of low-grade coffee that goes into instants, Robusta coffee. And they've driven the price down all over the world through this development plan, I think, of the World Bank. Making it very, very difficult for small farmers right now. For about a year and a half, there's been no way that a small coffee farmer can make a living, can break even with the price they're getting paid, the world price of coffee. So that adds a little urgency to our discussion. What I'd like to do, if there's some questions, we'll take them now about this sort of mathematics stuff. I'd like you to take a look at the first part of this video, and then we'll do a little analysis on what people have to go on, SWOT analysis. So, yeah, I think that's, if somebody could get that, the switch on the far side, even more over, whatever you need to do. So, come to Northern Nicaragua. Sandinista country. There's a switch on the far end. Not a red, not this one. This is filmed in Seattle.
It's nice to have a cup of coffee to sit and talk a little. imagine coffee too.
Oh, coffee is lifeblood in the morning.
I'm fairly large quantity, maybe 8 or 10 cups a day.
I don't think a function happens without coffee, no matter what time of day or night it is.
The Lutherans, you do love your coffee. Hola, I'm what you Lutherans are all talking about. I'm Mr. Bean, the real Mr. Bean. You see me every day in your cup of coffee. But I wonder, do you know much about me? Well, I'm going to spill the beans. Let me take you back to where I come from. Coffee beans are grown by small farmers like Daniel in Nicaragua. He's come to town to sell his coffee. The buyers can see him coming.
How much are you paying for coffee?
$1,020 for a sack. You'll see why we call these coffee buyers coyotes.
Oh yeah, leave it here. How much are you paying for coffee?
1,000 cordobas for a full stack. Do you like the price? Are you going to leave it here? Leave it here.
It's good. How's the scale? Go with the sack somewhere else. Not all the scales are the same, but you have to find the difference yourself.
336 for the correct. That price doesn't leave much for Daniel and his family. But he has to take it.
It's delicious. It is good coffee. I have 5 acres of farmland. I get my first cup of coffee at 4 in the morning. This year has been a little bad for me. A little bad. It was a really low yield. I have gotten about half of what I hoped for.
Daniel and his family work so hard, but they never get ahead. To get through the year, he has to take out a loan from a coyote and fall into debt. For Daniel, it's like every year he bets the farm. And Daniel is not alone.
Farmers know they aren't paid a fair price. Coyotes name their price. We farmers should be setting the price. We pay the cost of producing coffee.
Coyotes set the price, and that's how they break you. They pay you half of what it's worth. You know how it is. They know you need. You're desperate. You need money for food. If you can't pay back the coyotes for your lonely time, they take your farm away from you.
Daniel really worries about his family. He has 16 kids and grandkids all living in his house.
The harvest is over, so now I have to go out and earn more money some other way. The farm doesn't give us enough income for food even. We'll have to work as day laborers.
It's sad for Daniel. I hope he doesn't end up like these folks, hired hands on a coffee plantation. This land used to be small family farms, but a corporation bought it up. Coffee is big business. After oil, coffee is the most traded commodity in the world. Coffee makes lots of money for someone, but small farmers don't see much of it. More and more coffee is coming from full sun coffee plantations. These places give me nightmares. They cut down the rainforest so they can blast us beans with sunlight. That makes us grow faster so that we boost profits, but we get all stressed out. And bugs attack us. So they cover us with chemical fertilizers and pesticides. Even chemicals banned in the United States. Yuck! Think what this does to the birds and the beans and the farmers. After we pick, they peel off our pulp, leading it to rot and pollute rivers. Qué lástima. One more sad thing that I must tell you, my friends. A big full sun coffee plantation may look nice, but it's a green desert. Just listen. No birds. Birds from the States used to visit us every winter. With the trees gone, the birds are disappearing. I miss those hummingbirds and orioles. Don't you think it's time to wake up and smell the coffee? There has to be a better way. Actually, there is. And Lutherans have something to do with it.
Stuck in Nicaragua. The coffee picking time is a special type of joy.
This is good organic coffee, sustained by nature. It's not contaminated with chemicals.
Ah, this is heaven. I like it here in Reina's village. Us beings have it made in the shade. Living with the birds and the trees, this is the way we are meant to be. Coffee grown this way saves a lot of the rainforest. These farmers are smart. They use natural ways to keep bugs under control. And they don't throw away our pulp. They mix it with organic matter and worms to make fertilizer.
Yes, as a fertilizer, it is effective. You don't have to use other types of inputs on the plant. This is organic, shade-grown coffee.
It's easy to drink coffee, but to produce coffee is a lot of work.
in La Pampa.
Here in the La Pampa, we have 43 families. I thought maybe I would grow up and become a secretary. We didn't have enough money for me to go on in school. But I like being a coffee farmer. It allows us to improve our lives. If we work and sacrifice, then coffee will change our lives for the better.
Why is Reina's life so very different from Daniel's?
Coyotes don't come here because we don't sell coffee to them anymore.
That's why life is so different here. It's because of fair trade. Fair trade means bypassing coyotes, paying farmers a fair price, helping them work in cooperatives, offering affordable credit, and taking care of the earth. Reina's coffee is fair trade coffee. You can get it through the Lutheran World Relief Coffee Project.
Okay, the lights again. Please.
Yes, thank you.
The video goes on. The whole thing is about 23 minutes. It's made to be shown in an adult forum, and there's a study guide which allows you to have a discussion afterwards, even if you don't feel you might not know much about it. But you see here the two key examples of who grows coffee and what their life is like. The tiny fair trade movement. It's less than 1% of coffee sold in the USA. But it's rather significant in Europe. I don't have the figure, but my recollection is something like 15%, 20% of coffee sold in Europe has a fair trade seal on it. The movement has come a lot farther there. You got it in Australia, Norma Jan?
Yeah, but it's not in supermarkets.
To get this kind of coffee in the States, you normally have to go to a co-op where the members are concerned about the ecological and economic provenance of their food, and you can buy a fairly traded coffee. What the Coffee Project, which it ended with there at this part in the of the video, does is it says to parishes, buy it by writing a check to Equal Exchange, a fair trade coffee company near Boston, and buy it by the case, and get rid of your Maxwell House and your Folgers, and start having a little justice in your cup on Sunday morning, and at home if you want to, but as a consciousness-raising thing with a concrete step attached. And just to understand a bit more what it all means, I wanted to do a little explanation of some of what you've seen. Are you familiar with SWOT analysis? Analyses? SWOT. S is for strengths, W is for weaknesses, O is for opportunities, and T is for threats. And from what you've learned, with all the help you need from me, we'll do a SWOT analysis on Daniel, the father of the little family trying to make a go of it by themselves on their 5 acres, and Reina, the co-op member that you saw second. Danielle selling in the conventional free trade market, and Reina selling everything she can that the fair trade market will buy. And the biggest frustration for people like her is that the fair trade market can't buy all the coffee that they'd like to sell to it. Because there's not enough of us in the drinking end of the equation who are insisting on fairly traded coffee. And if any of you are from North Dakota or other wheat-growing states, and you know some Lutheran farmers or Methodist farmers or Presbyterian farmers or atheist farmers who are trying to make a living on what they get for their wheat or their corn, there's a lot of parallels here. If you know what a bushel of corn sells for, what the amount of corn in your cornflakes bowl sold to the farmer for and what you paid for it, it's some of the very same sort of dynamics are in evidence. So could we just do by participation, and I won't write too much on the board about this, but let's do SWOT on Daniel. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. What strengths does Daniel have? Daniel, the man with the 16 kids and grandkids, came down on his horse. Pardon?
Hardworking.
Got lots of kids to help him.
Got lots of workforce. Six sons, three daughters, 16-person labor force.
And he has a producing farm.
He has a producing farm. But what did he say about his harvest that year?
Half
of what he hoped. He hoped for 30 bags, he got 15 bags. But let's just stick with the strengths. He actually got his land, you can't learn it from the video, but he got his land in the Sandinista land reforms after the revolution in Nicaragua. So a little guy like that got some land for the first time in his life. Any other strengths? You got five? You've done it all. I couldn't think of any others either. He's independent. He's a tough guy. Is that a strength? I hope so. I mean, that's all he's got. Weaknesses. What are the weaknesses of Daniel?
Debts.
We just had a sentence in there, but what he did was he sold, I've got it here somewhere, he sold half of his 57 bags early in May for a third of what he could have got for them if he'd waited till January, because he needed cash. So he went to a coyote and sold 7 bags of coffee he didn't have for a third of what he could get for him if he could have waited till his harvest had come in, because he needed cash for the interim. So take a little bit now instead of more later. The position of a weak partner in a business deal. Other weaknesses? What does it mean if output is less in the coffee business, typically for a tree? Anybody know enough about it?
Price should go up.
Yeah. I'm thinking of production of the actual trees. They start bearing at 3 to 5 years, and I think they peak at about 10 years, and they can go on bearing for about 30 years, but they start trailing off. And Daniel's trees happen to be getting old, and he doesn't have the capital or the horsepower, manpower, person power, to really keep up with that and keep planting new ones. You know, be thinking ahead 5 to 10 years like he has to be to keep the whole 5 acres doing well. Other weaknesses.
They've got no control over the price.
Absolutely. Major, major thing. And it's been below the cost of production now for 18 months.
He doesn't have the manpower as the other. The other ones have 40 families.
Right.
He has only his family.
Right. When we showed up to film him, 8 of his 16 people were in the field working, including you saw some of the littler kids. But that's all he has. Other weaknesses?
He's probably competing with someone just like him down the road.
Yeah. He walked the gauntlet. See, this is Daniel living up here on his 5 acres. Here's San Juan del Rio Coco, where he came to sell. You saw him walking down the street, Se Compra Cafe. You know, those are the coyotes, the people who, the first person in the chain that brings coffee to you, they're the buyers. And they go to pay as little as they can to Daniel. And so he was comparing prices, what they had to offer. But and in a sense, it's put the poor against the poor to the next slightly more powerful person.
I always wonder why, you know, the other farmers on the hill wouldn't get together and say, our price is such and such.
Right.
Except that they are so dependent on the immediate income.
Yeah, and they've all, one might have to break and run for some things, and they might get run out of town. Yeah.
I was just going to say, even when they do get together, like the coffee producers that we visited when I went on the LWR study tour to Tanzania, and it was a coffee cooperative, they still needed the buyers. I mean, they were trying to set the prices. There were two things that were affecting them. They said once they hit 15% of their coffee sold on the fair trade market, it was affecting their overall price at auction, which was really good. But you know, they needed to maintain at least 15% on the fair trade market, which was really hard. And then the other thing they said was the debts of, they said not just their country, but because Brazil is so deep in debt, Brazil has been cutting down rainforests, doing this, like the sun growing
full sun, yeah.
Yeah, full sun coffee, and that's affecting their price. Mm-hmm. So even if the coffee producers there want it, I mean, then they are. There's like 100,000 of them all together trying to set their price. But if the ducks of Brazil are too overwhelming that Brazil is trying to get its cash through coffee, mm-hmm. It's affecting the price in Tanzania.
Okay. Debt, international debt question coming up there. Other weaknesses?
You talked about vertical and horizontal.
Yeah.
Actually, he is still in the vertical, while the fair trade is in the horizontal, isn't it?
No, he's vertical. It's horizontal because he isn't. He doesn't work for Dole or Chiquita. He doesn't work for Folgers or Maxwell.
Oh, Cubs. I see.
See, so it's a business deal between him and the coyote. That means that we can break the chain if we get in there between the coyote and him, and that's exactly what fair trade does. At the end of the street at San Juan del Rio Coco is Proto Co-op, the fair trade co-op that includes Reyna. Mm-hmm. And if he would walk that far, he'd have to have joined them to sell to them. And he hasn't taken that step, but he could join them to sell to them, become part of a democratically run farmers co-op, and then sell through the fair trade system.
It sounds like also that the coyotes are not just buying the coffee, but they're sort of de facto money lenders.
Yeah.
So there's a whole other industry of just keep families for a lifetime in debt.
Right. He farms organically, not because he's a green, you know, nut.
He can't afford it.
He can't afford to do anything else. He can't afford to even make his own compost. He's not organized enough. He can't buy fertilizer, and he can't do the full sun, you know, the high-tech approach, high yield. He can't get certified either. He doesn't even have the organization to get himself certified as an organic producer, even though he is sort of a poor man's organic. One man against the system, lives year by year, doesn't have anything for collateral, except next year's crop. Those are other weaknesses I listed. Yeah.
What about the coyotes? Do they do pretty well, or are they kind of marginal too?
They're marginal. The fish get bigger and bigger up the chain. Some are okay. Some are working for multinational companies. And some are just, like the guy who actually bought it in this case is actually a university-trained agronomist who couldn't get a job. So he's a coyote. But they're making about 30 cordobas on a bag, which is not much. Just a couple dollars on a bag.
And they sell to the multinationals?
No, they sell to the beneficios, the ones that process it within the country.
Is education a factor here at all? Or?
Yeah, I mean, Daniel wouldn't have 16 grandkids and kids if his wife was educated. And if he
and
was.
What about his know-how in the farming?
Absolutely. And we get to a bit of that with the co-op. One more comment at the back.
What jumped him stops him from joining the cooperative?
We asked him. And he said he was, he'd heard that they cheated you. He was suspicious. His rugged individualism is both a strength and a weakness. He couldn't quite break down and throw his lot in with other people. I think he's been struggling all of his life and working hard and making it if the price of coffee was a little higher. So he said, best way is to organize, but I'm outside of it, I'm not part of it. He just kind of said, well, I'm just not there. Opportunities. Does he have any opportunities? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities.
Could join the co-op.
If he had better transportation, he could probably get to a better market.
Yeah? A little faster horse?
Pickup truck.
Did you see his horse? You want to put two bags of coffee on that horse. He can wait for the price to go up and sell when it's higher, but he has no other income, you know. And he's put his land into coffee, not into basic grains, which means he can't produce enough food to live on very easily because of the labor involved in the coffee. I wasn't quite sure how that was working out, but that's what's happened to a lot of them. They go for the cash economy and then they can't make it as subsistence farmers anymore, which is what they used to do.
The coffee I've seen growing in India, they actually mix crops all around it. So
right.
There's the coffee with, you know, a big tree with jackfruit on it.
Yeah.
They grow choco vines over the top to keep the shade.
Right.
So it's mixed.
That's what you saw here with Raina. When Mr. Bean was in the armchair saying, yes, I got it made in the shape, that's what we were trying to show. There were citrus, bananas, other things in a multicultural thing. And coffee developed as a shade plant in the Cafe province of Ethiopia, you know, a zillion years ago. And that's what it was meant to do. But now they've hybridized it so it can be full sun, high fertilizer, high pesticide, and high volume. But it's meant to be grown like that. And as someone who grew up in New Guinea and knows what a good tropical hillside looks like, I was really impressed around Raina's place, because you could look at a tropical mountainside and you couldn't tell it was a coffee growing area, because the upper canopy of the jungle was all still there. And underneath were these coffee trees. So that was really a dramatic difference from the full sun stuff you saw, the green desert approach, Miracle-Gro, coffee, you know. Yeah.
Jonathan, what I don't understand in your cup there is that it seems like the largest portion of, it's not exactly profit, some of it is expenses, but is going to the issues of shipping, distribution, and I'm not sure how that differs in fair trade from free trade, because, you know, a boat's a boat.
Right. Well, what fair trade does is it takes away the coyote and puts the farmer's co-op there.
Right.
The farmer's co-op sells it to Equal Exchange directly in Canton, Massachusetts. They still have to pay a shipping company and a roaster. But that's it. This chain has about 7 stops on it, and the fair trade chain has 2 or 3. And yeah, I think that's a fair enough explanation. You still have to pay the shipping, but you're not going through the competitive kind of, I have to make my piece, this next guy has to make his piece, and they're increasingly higher paid people up the line. You know, so what does the retailer do? You know, takes it out of the box, puts it on the shelf, and then rings the cash register up, and you know, you take it. Is that worth 25% of the price? Well, yeah, if you look at a supermarket and the kind of stuff we put in our supermarkets. Is that, I don't know, you have a question left on your face? Gotta watch it when the director's asking you a question.
No, it just seems that, you know, it is a better way to do it, but I still wouldn't imagine that proportionately that the person who grows gets very
no, it doesn't get a huge amount more. That's very true. You're very true. At the end there, I stopped on purpose on those bullets. You get a guaranteed minimum price out of fair trade. So $1.26 with a 5 cent organic premium is the fair trade minimum worldwide, which is about what it costs you to make a little bit on growing coffee. The world price right now is, I think, 60 cents. But fair trade holds the line at $1.26. So by you and me buying fair trade, we're agreeing to say to the market, you aren't omniscient and omnipotent, market. There are little farmers who need a guaranteed minimum. And that's an important point. It doesn't fall below that threshold, no matter what the world price does. And it's been underneath that threshold for 18 months. And so if farmers could all get the fair trade price, they would now be making 3 times as much as Danielle. Because I think it got down to 50, and they're getting almost $1.50. So that's a critical element. It's still a small part of the overall price you and I pay for coffee. But I think that's a reflection more of us having a lot of money, us desiring coffee. The people who handle it on this end are still highly paid by third world standards, even on the fair trade equation. And the economies of scale are completely different. The free trade market can work with vastly more quantities to pay for shipping and stuff like that than the fair trade market. So it's a very relatively expensive chain, even though it's fair. Fair with us making a lot more money anyway. you know, I wasn't an econ major. If anybody was and would like to take over, please do. But Kathy,
I wasn't either, but
let's jump in all the pastors here.
Well, isn't there also the sustainability benefit with doing the fair trade stuff, because they're, the way that they can farm
right.
is more sustainable over the long haul, both for themselves as well as for the environment, so
right.
they have a more guaranteed longevity that way
right.
too, which is different from the guy whose trees are old and can't afford
to. It's real important.
The new ones and for the clearing line.
Do you remember the bullets? It's a fair price. That was our shorthand for this minimum. Guaranteed credit. Fair trade offers them credit that they can afford rather than coyote style credit, which can be 24% per year. Training in different kinds of agricultural issues and even management issues for the co-op. And one more thing. Can't remember it right now, but that's a real important part of the argument. We can't beat the system as soundly as we'd like to with the price, but we can sure do it with sustainability, with training, with women's rights, with the co-op benefits for farmers themselves. We had a couple more questions at the back.
I think I read recently that Starbucks has got a small portion that they are now trying to do fair trade. How do you lobby, or what would you recommend in terms of consumers trying to put some pressure on businesses like Starbucks to buy more?
Yeah, that's a real tricky one, because I haven't kept up with what they've done now, but they bought two shipments of fairly traded coffee, which was something like 0.001 of their total sales, and then publicized it very heavily. The least you could do is ask for it when you go to a Starbucks. I mean, Starbucks, I'm sorry if we have a bunch of Starbucks addicts here, but Starbucks is that kind of thing. The high-end gourmet coffee is the most unfair, because you're willing to pay gobs and gobs for stuff that you know, you're even forsaking the pressure on them to have a competitive price, you know, that you have when you buy supermarket coffee by the 5-pound can and stuff like that. It would really be good to ask for fair trade every time you go to Starbucks if you're going to do that. The coffee in the fair trade market tends to be the same quality. This is actually gourmet coffee we're talking about here at Equal Exchange. But it isn't available at your neighborhood kiosk. You know, it's a little harder to get to. But they really need healthy, friendly, constant pressure to raise the part of them. I don't know what the percentage is now, but they got a lot of mileage out of a couple of shipments.
And it's hard to find in their stores.
Even
hard
more
to find.
Than that, they only have one roast.
Uh-huh.
You can't go in there and buy espresso, for instance,
right.
in a fair trade. It's really just a fig leaf.
Yeah, I think it is, a coffee leaf.
they put it in a corner so they can say they've got it,
right.
but it's not obvious it's in the store.
It's a threat to their whole business model. It absolutely is. And if you look at their publicity, it's not about the people who grew it. It's about the romance of coffee, you know, the Arabian Nights. And I mean, look at the labels and all the promo. It's not about people. It's about, you know, aroma and allure and romance and things that have to do with, you know, the pleasure of drinking coffee and where it comes from in your imagination. Yes, sir.
For foods in general, this sort of principle has to apply to a lot of them. I remember making some rough calculations once for Wheaties,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was, we came up with the farmer got about 5 cents for the box of Wheaties, and of course the price is whatever, $3 or something. So if you double the price to the farmer, double the price at
right.
that time, whatever it was, $3-$4 a bushel, it would only cost an extra nickel for
exactly.
our final product. And yet, there must be a lot of products that are in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so why don't we just all add 5 cents to our Wheaties and say, could you give this to the farmer, please?
But you realize, of course, when a grain company, Cargill, buys, you know, how many millions of bushels, if they double the price, it sounds significant.
Right.
Probably in terms of their profit, it isn't so.
You know, this is a similar phenomenon to the oil. You hear when OPEC raises the price of oil $10 a barrel, and you think, holy smokes, you know, gas is going to go from $1.50 to $2.50 because it's gone from $19 to $29. But the actual crude, the way I understand it, the actual crude oil price per barrel way back there at the oil field is such a small part of what happens to petroleum, the actual price you pay, that by the time it gets to you, that price increase is very little. It's 2 or 3 cents on the gallon. Because most of the rest of the structure is on later in the chain of what happens in refining and transportation and retailing. So I think there's a parallel there. Yeah, we've got a lot of economists here. Yes, sir.
I'm not an economist, and I'm from small town Alberta, Canada. In the last 5 years or so, we've had a relatively high-profile attempt through an ecumenical group right across Canada to try and promote fair trade coffee.
Yeah.
I think Canada's right around 5% now.
Uh-huh.
And there are numerous outlets right across the country, but they're all kind of small-time outlets. In our little city of Lethbridge, after the most recent local effort that we had, a group of us just kind of informally started going to our local gourmet, which is not Starbucks,
Timmy's
coffee place, and asking for fair trade coffee. And the guy was, I mean, everybody knows everybody. At the end of the day, we now have 3 or 4 different roasts of fair trade, fairly traded coffee in his store. And it's a nice little success story. We're not there yet, but we made considerable headway.
Always good to be led by Canada. Yeah, sir.
Is the stock market affects the free market as the free market the same for as the business?
I don't think so. This is the commodities market.
Yeah.
You know, it's Chicago Board of Trade and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's a whole different, you know, set of traders and everything. So I don't think. And generally, I think it's fair to say that the basic products that we deal with, sugar, wheat, coffee, even steel and stuff, I mean, but certainly the agricultural products, the prices for them are lousy. All the way through the dot-com boom and the stock market boom, it didn't help these things at all. And is that the real economy, or is that the real economy? I mean, the one that matters in God's heaven, you know? So, yeah. The pressure has been downward. As we get more and more efficient, as agriculture becomes more industrialized, the price on the basic commodities for the small farmers, I think, is just down. My relatives are all farmers in Nebraska, and they all have to farm more land than ever before and treat it less well in order to make a living. Go over it faster with bigger tractors, take down the fences. Yeah.
I would kind of think of that's how a lot of the way both dairy farming and cattle farming is, that the small farmers are not making it anymore, that they have to incorporate.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, they're not, the way even the trade in our United States, the variable is very vast.
Also. Yeah. Yeah.
Dad, Mr. Jones, a question for you.
Yeah.
Would you repeat then how groups can get a hold of, you know, cases to sell or promote?
Right. You can go to our website, LWR's website, or Equal Exchange's website, or call them up.
So it would be
www.equalexchange.org.
Thanks.
Or LWR.org. And you can also call 781-830-0303, that's Equal Exchange's number, in Canton, Massachusetts. And say who you're from, because what's happened now, we got some Ford Foundation money, $250,000 from the Ford Foundation. We're going to go after a couple other foundations to take this model into every other church group we can find and encourage them. And the Methodists are already starting. The Reformed Church is already starting. The Quakers have started, and one or two other groups, Presbyterians. Yeah.
Two questions, actually. How does the price compare for the free trade coffee to us, the consumer?
You can get a half a pound for or a pound for $7.
Okay.
And it's just as good as Starbucks.
Okay.
And it's cheating slightly because you have to send a check to Canton and they UPS you a crate, a box of 20.5 pounds.
Okay. And then I noticed Daniel didn't haggle at all with the coyotes when he got into the, you know, with that many coyotes in town, it seems to me that he could sort of, you know, get somebody to up their price or something. Well, are they in control of the price at all? The people are sitting there?
It's a standoff. He went up and down and asked about five of them. We just showed two in the video, but he asked and compared prices. Yeah. But, you know, he needs to sell. They are in competition.
Are they in cahoots with each other? And
well, you heard the guy say, you have to tell me if my scale is good. Because the coyotes use bad scales, and the farmers put rocks in the bag, so it weighs more. So all the coyotes dump the bags out and see if there's any rocks in there before they actually pay them for it. So it's a little tiny war going on in that competitive, you know, sort of feed chain of independent businessmen. I can't tell where the power lies, but when you're a little farmer who needs cash and you've just busted your rear end to fix that little bag, you know, I don't know how powerful an arguer you are, because you can't go any farther than San Juan de Rio Coco. You know, the next place is up and over the mountains and far away. Just very quickly,
how long is this project since it was first begun?
About 4 years. And we went really quickly to about 1,000 parishes and then 25. We kind of plateaued now. So there's 18,000 Lutheran parishes out there. We're going to go get them with that Ford money. But if you guys aren't doing it...
you serve it in our coffee hour.
Yeah. At the end of the video, there's a great... If you want to stay and watch, there's a great set of testimonies from the people at Port Angeles, Holy Trinity, who I think come up here and work, do work camps at Holden, about what it means to them. And one woman says everything in 18 seconds about how good this is. But just... We're getting out of town, but just listen to what you can do. You can use fairly traded coffee at your church and in your regular life, at the office, and maybe even, has Holden got fair trade? I don't know, but maybe even here. I think it's been talked about many times.
Coffee Mom. The sources are a little different, but it's
yeah,
the same
idea. Okay, well, that's good to know. Maybe it should say fairly traded coffee on
that.
Yeah,
it does.
It does?
I mean, there's the bulletin board on the food.
I guess I'm not awake. No. But look at strengths and weaknesses very briefly for Raina. She's a member of a 68-person co-op. She's a woman. She's a delegate to their meetings. She's very confident. I think you could see the difference in atmosphere. They had fun picking. We're going to send young people down there to help them pick at places like that now in coffee brigades a couple times a year. She said, we're the owners. She thanks anybody who buys fair trade. She's had training on organic fertilizer. She's got a 10-year perspective. They're refurbishing 20 hectares of their stuff. Hurricane Mitch creamed them pretty bad, but they're recovering by putting up seedlings and things like that. Their trees are old, too. They bought an old hacienda under the Sandinista reforms, and their output has gone from 1,000 bags when they bought it down to 130 bags a year. And the price has just gone through the floor since we made the video about 2 years ago. So their time has not been too much fun since then. And I worked out, and this has just knocked me over, that each member of that co-op, with all of their pride and all of their future positivism about where they were going with this thing, these farmers who never had land before and everything and working together, each member of the co-op makes $180 a year. So Raina has herself, her dad, her mom, and her granddad, four members, four times 180. That's their annual cash income from this successful fair trade coffee venture. Just for some relative numbers that we're dealing with here, when they say the smallest coffee players on the world market. Just remember that it's not just all economics. The environmental side is important too. Compare the biodiversity The natural pest control, those worms that turn the pulp into fertilizer are Cuban worms, so you're going to have some capitalist communist going on here. The Cubans have developed these worms that can make pulp into fertilizer in 60 days. And it's just wonderful stuff. The kids were just playing with it. It was so nice. And coffee grown in the full sun way, which ups the profits for the plantation, is the third most heavily pesticided and fertilized crop on the planet, after cotton and tobacco. Doing it with the trees and with the compost and everything keeps up the soil quality, keeps the water runoff from becoming a problem on easily eroded tropical hillsides where the soil isn't really very good if you take away the trees. Many, many benefits there. And as we drove between some of these places there in Nicaragua, guess what flew across the road in a flash of color?
Mr. Bean.
Try to keep my family from coming to these things. Actually, to save good Lutheran money, we didn't even give Mr. Bean legs, let alone wings. You see, he didn't have legs a couple times because each leg cost you several dollars. So we just did away with his legs. No, we live near Baltimore, 2 Baltimore Orioles. And they only go there because there's jungle left in some places. But they don't go there if you start cutting it all down. So compare Daniel, one step ahead of nothing, betting the farm every year, bit dispirited, dealing with a whole bunch of issues if you look at health and gender and other things there in his big family, and compare him to Reina and her co-op, where coffee gives them space to be real, if tiny, players in the global economy. Real strong sense of their dignity, their fullness of spirit about their future, alive and looking forward to the future. And as we left, Reina said, tell people in America to get ready to buy a lot more coffee in 5 years when our new trees come online. So that's, I leave you with that, and I'll be happy to talk more, but thank you for your presence. And drink justice, it tastes good. And if you haven't bought the book for this week and you just feel you really want to, this is a series of exercises by George Johnson, a lifetime in hunger appeal work in the Lutheran circles, and many small chapters with very practical applications of the issues we've been talking about. I think there's a couple left. Beyond Guilt. Beyond Guilt. That's fairly free to hand carry. They carry you. Yeah. We work with a group called SIR, which is Church of Brothers. Very small. Absolutely. And, 10,000 is there. We've done their stuff with a wrap around the city. If you buy Body, Mind, and Spirit, or a breakfast, organic breakfast plan, you're buying possibly some of Brenda's stuff. That's where it goes. And hello. Good to see you.
Yeah.
Is it equalexchange.com or .org?
It's at the bookstore.
It was out of the bookstore.
Oh, is it done?
I looked the other day and I thought I saw two. We tried to get one a day or so ago.
That's a good sign.
It's on back order.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Get online, go to Powell's.
The chapter headings are pretty good.
Yeah.
He says, from Ralph's department, from his garden hope, from Surfy's interview.
How old are you now?
Connected this, charity justice, private and social.
There's little quotes.
There's little things to do, reflections and actions.
Oh, wait, she put that here.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
So the Catholics sound like they haven't been doing their prayers there. They have in many countries, but not here. We have not been able to. We're with CRS in Baltimore, We work with them closely, love them.
But I think
But I think that the nature of the church may explain some of it. So through the bishops' council, do they have coffee hours quite sacredly as Lutherans?
Because there are some churches that have real strong gender social justice.
Absolutely educated.
No, they do reforms, and so it'd be a natural thing for us to go back to.
Where could we get this video?
From, I should have said that. 1-800.
Okay, wait a second.
Here. I should have said that.
So that video, if you were.
Because you can just change the name.
You call that number.
Okay.
Well, you can show it for free, they'll send it to you. The prices that you show it, send it back.
Okay, that'd be good. Is that
you guys are Roman Catholic?
Yeah.
That's great.
But I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. We talked about it before.
Right. I know that one, the work of human hands. CRS does a project on fair trade handcrafts.
El Salvador, which they coffee producer?
Yep, their very first coffee was called Cafe Salvador, and it's still there.
And so they have as well.
Yeah, you can order Cafe Salvador.
Okay. That's great. We have a sister parish in El Salvador.
Right. It's real hard. This has happened to us about 20 times. A Lutheran parish has a link to a coffee growing area half in the area south or something, and they want to buy their coffee.
It's the principle.
You can if you want to try to import it yourself, but to do fair trade, you have to get on a fair trade register. So the producers have to qualify for the fair trade register, which is a bit of a process. It's not too bad, but it takes effort. Yeah, we can wipe it up. And then you have to, it has to get sold through the fair trade channel in order for it to, for not have to reinvent the wheel. They'll probably get it to you.
So we would buy it directly
from Equal Exchange. This is best for the video. Equal Exchange, I can give you the number too.
You said the website.
Equalexchange.org. They're in Canton, Massachusetts. Yeah. They actually have a guy in Portland full time on the West Coast. There's been a lot of press out in the Northwest. And they have a full Tom Hamlin who's full time in the Northwest. And he'd come to your, I can't speak for him, he might come to your parish. He's up in the Seattle area. I think he's based in Portland. Equal Exchange.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not selling it. We're saying, hey, we're a development agency, we're a church. We're not coffee dealers. But there's these guys who come out of the co-op movement. And I didn't talk about it, but Equal Exchange is a worker-owned co-op. And very interesting place to go. They do things like have a roster of who's going to cook lunch every day after work. And they sit down to lunch as a staff. and they it's worker owned. It's for profit, but you know, it's not gonna make you rich. And the shares are held by things like Catholic Sisters.
Yeah.
The very first start was a group of little money from some Catholic Sisters in the Northeast. And we struck up this deal together, and we have almost doubled the volume of their business just by getting the proof that's involved. Not the total sales, but the number of orders has doubled. And so very skeptical people within the co-op movement people exchange our knowledge. Whoa, this is faith and fair trade in Greece. That's what people are saying. It's faith-based fair trade. It's high volume, it's high handling cost because it's small orders. Their big orders are to co-ops and restaurants. But it's, you know, it's an alternative. It's a wake-up call.
Is that every, you know, you get people in the connection and they go out and buy there every day and they talk it up.
Right. And you can go to your supermarket and say, hey, why don't you trade for free coffee? That's what we're encouraging now, to really start to bump against the bigger systems. Just say this is...
Yeah, because there is that organic market right across from the QFC.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, all the day.
You know, I got it from my sister. I don't know.
Hold up.
Where do you know where I got this? Is it from?
Yes, from your sister
Tucson.
Tucson.
I haven't seen it.
It's right on the way home.
I love this shirt.
Yeah.
Mom's going to jump you, so just, you know, watch out.
Don't wear it tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
The cover of this.
We have to go up and get up. It's so cold. We just have to change.
Okay. I'm in a...
Are you going to go down to the thingy?
Time crunch. I think I'm going to skip this person.
No, time crunch.
You have to go.
Well, we have to hike.
Oh, sorry. So, I didn't know that was for sure.
Yeah, I ran into Stig at supper, and we said we'd try to leave it near to 8 as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
So, please pray for me.
You have to get some food, I guess.
Yeah, I'll go home and pack for you.
Okay.
Well, there was a lot of discussion there.
Yeah, what exactly happened with that? Like, it was like halfway through the thing, people just started, kept raising their hands, and you just left it.
Yeah, I was just going to be finished. I wasn't going to do a whole lot more. I was going to do the SWOT analysis.
You already did that.
No, I didn't really finish Raina's.
Oh.
Flipped through it. And then I had a couple more things she had said and stuff, but I got far enough, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, does somebody know exactly where you're going or anything so that if you are late, we can do something about it?
Yep. Anybody who's done, you know, like Jeremy and those guys.
Can you find out?
We will. But we should be back by supper tomorrow, after maybe Monday afternoon. Just a minute.
Yeah.